Finally this week, a new way to think about the search for extraterrestrial life. Here's Cambridge University's William Baines.
I come at this from a very indirect historical route, but in summary, I became interested in astrobiology because of some particular chemistry I was doing. And as a biochemist, I started out by asking, well, what is life and what is biochemistry from a very fundamental level? And that seemed to be quite a productive line of research to follow. Most of the material I was reading about, the origins of life, was written by chemists who looked at it chemically, or astronomers who looked at it in terms of accreting planets. They weren't looking at it in terms of somebody who's been used to trying to discover new drugs, looking at organisms as very complicated, very poorly understood collections of stuff. So I thought I'd start with that and see what the stuff is and what could we say about life from the very basic level, our basic understanding of the process of living.
We obviously have a very good example of life here on Earth. It's very diverse, it's very interesting. But in a way, biochemically, that sort of makes it just a sample of one. Is it possible that this blinkers the way that we do look for life?
Well, it certainly does. It has to, doesn't it? We look around at life on Earth, and it's so powerful, it's so diverse, that it's very easy to be overwhelmed by that and think, you know, there's no other possible way you could put life together. Actually, I was talking to another conference attendee a bit earlier, and one of the great advantages of biochemists talking to physicists is they think about things completely differently. This physicist said, well, actually, we don't have any samples of life at all, because you need to discount the Earth because of observer bias. So once you discount the Earth, how many examples of life do we have? And we might have life on Mars, but we don't know anything about it. Apart from that, we have no examples of life at all. And if you start from that position, you realise we don't really know much about what life would be like outside the Earth at all. So we're both overwhelmed by the fact there's life here, but also we're conned into thinking that we are typical. We might be. We've no idea, but we don't know.
So do you have to look at this, try and be objective and look at the possible biochemical combinations that we could have that could create life?
Absolutely, and that's the overall thrust of the research that I'm doing. It's a really difficult problem, and I don't pretend to have done more than nibble at the edges of it. But yes, the idea is to try to think from a chemical basis, what sorts of chemistry could you put together to do the sort of fundamental things that life does?
We have, from years of studying chemistry, a very good idea of how different molecules will react together, what possible combinations we have, but it very quickly builds up into an enormous network of possible interactions. How do you whittle this down to the ones that could be plausible for life?
Yeah, it's a huge problem in combinations of options. There are two answers to that. The first is there are some very general rules you can apply. So life has to work in quite thick solutions. If you look at the difference between a fish and the sea, the fish is full of chemicals, full of stuff, protein, metabolites, all sorts of things, and the sea is clean. So life is going to have to be dissolved in something. So if you try to build life out of chemicals that simply don't dissolve, it's not going to work. They have to be reasonably stable. So trying to build life out of molecules that will instantly react with water and expecting that life to work on Earth just isn't going to work. And there are a number of slightly more indirect and sophisticated filters you can put in, but the same sort of basic logic. The difficulty is, does that then leave you with one or two possibilities of biochemistry, or half a dozen different types of possibilities, or does it leave you with hundreds of billions of possibilities? At the moment, we have no idea.
Is it actually easier to look at a planet or a moon and say, well, this is the chemical environment we have, these are the options for life?
That's what I hope. That's the overall aim, to say not only these are the options for life, but these are the likely signs that that sort of chemistry is going on in that environment. And then, of course, we can look for it. This is a fascinating intellectual puzzle, but it's not much point doing it unless it comes out with something you can test. Something that the astronomers can look for in their spectra, or that spacecraft can look for when they land.
I understand that you have been considering Titan as an option and looking at the chemistry on Titan.
Yes, Titan is the coldest body in the solar system, which we know has definitely got liquid on it. The surface is incredibly cold. It's only about 90 kelvins, so 90 degrees above absolute zero. It's definitely got ponds of liquid methane-ethane mixture on the surface. In some ways, it's like Earth. But, of course, the chemistry is bound to be completely different. And that's something why I've chosen it, not because I think there's likely to be life there, but because it is an extreme example that pushes your assumptions and therefore says, can we say anything sensible about that?
So if life does have to have solubility involved, then it must be a series of chemicals that are soluble in this liquid methane and ethane. Do we know of any that would fit the bill?
We know a few very small, simple molecules, definitely. I mean, liquid methane, liquid ethane are important to the gas industry, so people have measured the solubility of things like carbon dioxide and water in liquid methane. People have measured the solubility of a number of small molecules in very cold solvents, so liquid methane, liquid nitrogen. So we've got some data on what is soluble, on the type of molecule that's soluble. They all tend to be small. And this is a problem for designing a biochemistry, because you do need things that will dissolve, and you need lots of different molecules to dissolve. And whether we can get enough different types of molecule to dissolve is still an open question.
What are the core jobs that we need biochemistry to do in order to get what we think of as life?
Oh, gosh. Well, you have to be able to have some sort of large molecules that can act as catalysts. This isn't just to make the chemistry happen fast, it's also to make sure that the chemistry goes in the right direction. You need some sort of information storage. Life works from an internal plan, a coded description. This doesn't completely describe life, but life emerges from that code. Clearly, life has to handle energy. It needs energy to make something happen, to drive the chemistry forward in the right direction. You need structural components. You need to contain the chemistry in some sort of bag or sack. The problem with stating the requirements for the chemistry in these terms is they're incredibly general. Somebody came along and said, could you do these things with the chemistry of silicon? And the answer is, not under terrestrial conditions. Water, in particular, just dissolves most silicon chemicals and turns the silicon back into sand. But in Titan conditions, where the water's all completely frozen out as rock, and you're dissolving it in liquid methane, liquid ethane, the answer's possibly. Do I think there's silicon-based life swimming around on the lakes of Titan? Extremely unlikely. But we can't yet rule it out.
Cambridge University's William Baines on a biochemical approach to finding life on other planets. That's all we have for this special edition of The Naked Scientists. There were far more highlights than we could possibly fit into an hour, so keep an eye out for more space science on The Naked Astronomy podcast and on our website at thenakedscientists.com. Next week, we'll be back with a show looking at archaeogenetics. How can we apply modern genetic techniques to the study of archaeological evidence? We'll be exploring human evolution and migration, as well as looking at the pathogens that have evolved alongside us. As usual, you can get your questions into us before the show by email to chris@thenakedscientists.com, by tweeting @nakedscientists, or on our forum at thenakedscientists.com/forum. Also, Diana O'Carroll will be back with our question of the week. She's asking if there's any way to accurately tell somebody's age if their date of birth has been lost in the mists of time. In other words, can you carbon date your granny? We'll have the answer for you next week, but in the meantime, let us know what you think on the forum or by email, and we'll include our favourite comments and answers next week. Many thanks to everybody who joined me throughout the National Astronomy Meeting, and to Tom Simpkins, who helped me with production. So until next time, have a great week, and goodbye.
The Naked Scientists podcast comes to you from Cambridge University and is supported by the Wellcome Trust, the EPSRC and UK FAST. For more information, look us up online at nakedscientists.com.